We need a revolution. There's only one solution.
Hello and welcome to the revolution, the peaceful health revolution, the medical freedom informed consent revolution, the take charge of your life and your own freedom and your family and your community revolution. Welcome to the Liberty Hour on Informed Life Radio, brought to you by Informed Choice Washington. If you're listening and you are not yet signed up to hear from Informed Choice Washington, please go to the website, informedchoicewa.org, sign up to get our newsletter, to get action alerts. And then if you can, if you value free speech and you want to support this hour of free speech radio on the air, please donate what you can, even just a couple bucks a month, added to a couple bucks a month from other listeners, keeps free speech on the air in the greater Puget Sound region and streaming across the globe from various platforms. So we are very grateful. We do not give medical or legal advice on this show. We're just here to bring you information so you can go out there and explore more, so you can live that informed life, as is the theme always. So my regular co-hosts, Javier and Bob, were unavailable. And at the last minute, I pulled in the lovely Lisa Templeton. Welcome to Liberty Hour, Lisa.
Thank you. Happy to be here, Bernadette.
The last hour, you had so many great things to say. And we had a little bit of a delay between, I don't know if the probably listeners can't hear it, but we're feeling a little delay in our talk. And I feel like there were so many good things I might have inadvertently interrupted you from saying. So I'm going to try to have more of a pause so that that doesn't happen during this hour.
Okay, thank you.
So, yeah, so people just tuning into the Liberty Hour, Lisa is with the same great organizations that I'm with. So she's with Informed Choice Washington, she's with Children's Health Defense, and she's with Stand for Health Freedom. And she's a wife and a mom and a dear friend. Just honored to have her in my life. And so knowledgeable. You know, everybody out there, you guys are also used to Bernadette. Yep, yep, yep. I got my opinion for everything. And my dear quiet Lisa is a fountain of wealth, as are so many moms, right? Out there, and especially the moms that I've met in this whole informed consent movement, who really think critically and do a lot of research before making decisions that are really critical to their health and their family's health. So I do value you, Lisa. I want you to know.
Well, thanks, Bernadette. You have taken me under your wing and helped me learn and grow, and we're all learning all the time. And, you know, in a way, that's really exciting, isn't it? There's so much.
It really is. There is so much to learn. And a couple weeks ago, when Javier gave us an hour about the brain, we learned that no matter how old you get, you still have brain growth and you still have adult stem cells that could go in and heal. You know, it's never too late to learn. And that's really what life is about, this great learning journey we're on. I hope I never get so arrogant that I think I know it all. I know a lot of people think I'm a know-it-all. Mm-hmm. But I really do try to stay open-minded to new things and to step outside of my comfort zone and to learn. Okay, enough with the yapping. I had too much coffee today. So before we bring on our guest, who is the guardrail guy, and he's amazing, Lisa is going to first give us some critically important information about a Washington State Department of Health Vaccine Advisory Committee meeting that she recently remotely attended. So, Lisa, go ahead and tell us what's going on.
Okay. The meeting I attended yesterday was for the Washington Vaccine Association, an organization that didn't come onto my radar until pretty recently. So the main reason I'm talking to you today is I want everybody to please be aware of the measles situation that public health in Washington seems to have in the works for us. And I'll let you know at the end how you can take action. Let me first give a little bit of background. this organization called Washington Vaccine Association is a nonprofit charitable organization that came to our attention, my attention anyway, when companion bills, House Bill 2157 and Senate Bill 5892, which sought to change the definition of vaccine, were filed at the beginning of this session at the request of the Department of Health. Now, session just ended yesterday, and these two identical bills, one of them was passed, and it's sitting on Governor Inslee's desk, and he's expected to sign it, having expressed support for it in the past. Those two bills changed the definition of vaccine within this specific statute that applies to Washington Vaccine Association. So vaccine used to mean, under this, this only applies to pediatric vaccines. And it used to mean that it was approved by the FDA as safe and effective and recommended by Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, that's ACIP. So there were those two prongs, plus there was a prong that said vaccine means a preparation of killed or attenuated living microorganisms or fraction thereof that upon administration stimulates immunity that protects against disease. Well, they wanted to keep those first two prongs, but instead of that language I just read to you, they just want vaccine to mean an immunization. So, of course, this raised our inquiry, and that's how we came to learn about the Washington Vaccine Association. If you're signed up to receive alerts from Informed Choice Washington, you would have received action alerts regarding these bills, asking that they not change that, and I'll kind of explain why. The Washington Vaccine Association has publicly admitted that the reason they requested this language change via Department of Health is to allow them to include the new nirsevimab, also known as Beyfortus, in their program because it doesn't cover monoclonal antibodies without this language change. Now, nirsevimab is an AstraZeneca Sanofi product that is used to indiscriminately immunize all infants under 8 months of age in their first RSV season, plus a second dose for immunocompromised infants. These monoclonal antibodies are intended to impart passive immunity, as opposed to the old vaccine definition that prompts your body purportedly to produce antibodies. Yes.
Yeah, I want to give one more little factoid to help people understand the WVA, Washington Vaccine Association. Washington State is what's called a universal purchase state. So, and this was voted on by the legislature years ago. They decided to that they would be purchasing at the state level all of the vaccines that would be given to children in order to take advantage of the CDC getting bulk prices from the pharmaceutical companies. So they buy everything, and then doctor's offices, will order from them. If you have private insurance, it goes, to pay back the WVA, or if you've got state insurance, or if you've got vaccines for children program, that's the federal dollars that will pay for those vaccines. So there's a lot of pools of money flowing into this. Well, at some stage, they decided they didn't want the state to run it anymore. So they started this nonprofit association, but it's still run by Department of Health individuals, as well as lobbyists for the vaccine industry and others. It's really this very interesting, and maybe we'll do a whole show on it sometime, Lisa. So I thank you so much for bringing this to our attention. So this is really important because it means they wanted to change the definition in order to be able to buy the monoclonal antibodies that you were just describing. And it also makes it legal for them to probably continue buying genetic therapies, which aren't vaccines as it was previously designed either. Yeah.
Yes, they've expressed they've used the word exciting and thrilled to be able to provide these monoclonal antibodies and other technologies, they say, to our children. So just a little more detail on what you just described, Bernadette. The WVA was established by the legislature in 2010, and what they do is collect what they call assessments from private insurers every time a doctor's office or other healthcare provider administers a pediatric vaccine here in the state. They're insured. The privately insured patients, those companies are required to give a certain amount of money to WVA. Then WVA gives all that money. Well, first they take off their administration costs. Just by the way, their executive director earns over $26,000 a month. Then they remit
a month, $26,000 a month.
Their financial statements are on their website. They remit the rest of the money to Department of Health, who then adds the federal vaccines for children funds that you mentioned, Bernadette, and purchases from the CDC at a wholesale price vaccines for every child in the state. Then DOH distributes all those vaccines to all the providers' offices, and then the providers administer them to all the patients. And apparently one advantage of this program is that the providers need not keep separate inventories for privately and publicly insured children. Informed Choice Washington has been investigating the WVA, including its administrative expenditures, and we've started attending its meetings. So back to the measles. After yesterday's vaccine committee meeting, a subset of the Washington Vaccine Association, we hear that they are gearing up for a measles scare. They cited a CDC report as of February 22nd that there had been 35 cases reported this year, I assume in the U.S., I found this interesting. They stated that 89% of the cases were in the unvaccinated or unknown category and 11% in the vaccinated. I wonder why they didn't separate out the unvaccinated and unknown, and why didn't they lump the unknown in with the vaccinated? It appears that, you know, the 89% is so much more than the 11%, but if we could take out that unknown, it would be a lot more informative.
They do that with flu as well, is the unknown category is often lumped with the unvaccinated. Yeah.
They quoted a 77.6% rate of eligible Washington school children who have received two doses of MMR or evidence of immunity. And they used this they quoted this out of the IIS, which is the Immunization Information System here in Washington. And they shared a slide by county showing that Asotin County, pardon me if I'm saying that right or wrong, with lowest coverage. And they claimed that they only had a 45% complete rate. Dr. Zorn, who is one of the vaccine committee members, mentioned that the IIS rates are artificially low due to what she called denominator inflation, such as children who have moved out of state. And a person who has wonderful work to study on this is Carl Kanthak, Carl with the K and with the K on Substack, and he's been on the show many times. He explains the many ways that this 77.6% rate is incorrect. And first of all, the exemption rate for the MMR was only 3.1% before House Bill 1638 was passed in 2019 that removed our philosophical exemption from that one shot. And using the IIS is not accurate. They should instead use the annual reports that schools are required to submit each year to Department of Health. Another problem is the age at which Department of Health counts the MMR dose as overdue is actually within the window during which CDC says it's fine. So DOH counts before their deadline. Now, Bernadette, did you want to chime in a minute about why it may just be okay if the coverage rates were really this low?
Well, yeah, because we don't know, the studies have not been done, what percentage of children in Washington State or the United States can safely get two doses of MMR on the CDC schedule. That is not known. And so to say just out of the blue that, oh, we feel like 95% is the number that we need for so-called herd immunity, yet not look to see if 95% of children could safely be immunized according to their schedule. And I would say we need to celebrate lower numbers. I don't want artificially projected lower numbers, which are used as scare tactics to trick legislators into removing exemptions. We need a full, broad education about what the real numbers are, what they mean, what these products are, individual susceptibility to infection and to adverse reaction to the shots. I guess that's pretty much, and what I want to say there is that we bring up the fact that they cite low numbers, which are not true. Immunization numbers are far higher than what they are claiming. But we also don't want you to think that we celebrate high numbers, because those high numbers are causing a lot, include a lot of casualties and a lot of harm to children. So we need to get on to our guest. But Lisa, before we move from this subject, and thank you so much for bringing it to our attention, and we're going to be covering this a lot more in the future. There's so much there to dig into. But there was a quote there from one of the doctors, I believe it was Edgar Marcuse, who has been serving he was on ACIP for a while. He's worked with, you know, with the CDC. He's been on the Vaccine Advisory Committee. He's sort of a contemporary up there in the Fauci era. What did he say at this meeting that had you concerned?
He said verbatim, maybe we need an outbreak to solve this problem. He expressed a lot of alarm and concern about this low coverage rate and about the measles cases around the country. And there are plans to alert the Department of Health's Vaccine Advisory Committee at their meeting on April 11th. So please make sure you're signed up for our action alerts. Just go to our webpage, informedchoicewa.org. Up at the very top, there's Join the Team in blue. We won't spam you. But you're going to want to get our talking points and just to let you know how to take action, sending comments and or joining their hybrid meeting.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you so much. And remember, everybody who catches a case of the measles ends up with lifetime immunity. So they become part of the true herd immunity. Anyway, so Lisa, thank you so much for that information. And we're going to stay tuned, and I hope you'll come back and update us as this progresses. We're going to move on now to our guest. His name is Steve Imers. Steve Imers, and he's also known as the Guardrail Guy. Welcome to the Liberty Hour, Steve, of Inform Life Radio.
Thanks for having me, Bernadette.
Yeah, you're welcome. So I'll let listeners know that I met Steve this past summer. We were both working on some issues that were happening in the legislature in Nashville regarding access to information, autopsy information, which can be a very difficult subject. But Steve has some very personal information that shows just why it's very important in situations where you lose a loved one to have full access to the information around what occurred, because you will find just what happened. And such as in Steve's case, he became an advocate for safety. So what he experienced, the loss he experienced, others wouldn't have to go through. So with that, Steve, I'm gonna let you go ahead and dive in and begin at the beginning and explain what happened to your daughter. How many years ago was it now?
7 years ago. I owned a small business, and I had a crossbow in my hands. I was headed out into the woods for a morning hunt. I can still smell the coffee. I had a Tweety Bird cup. And we got a phone call that my daughter Hannah, who was 17, had been in a very serious crash, and that it was just critical. And I had worked EMS. I was a nurse by training. So we got in the vehicle, and they won't tell you anything. So we got to the point where we're either going to turn towards the crash scene or go to the level one trauma center. I was hoping to go to the, and I called dispatch and I said, was a helicopter dispatch? Cause they, no. Will there be any transports? No. I knew at that point my daughter was dead. And I began asking questions. Anytime you have a situation where you have one person, having worked EMS, it may sound crude, that is dead right there, and another person that's just totally walkie-talkie fine on the other side of the car, you have to ask, what happened? What caused injuries not compatible with life? And so I started asking questions, and what I found was just awful corruption, nepotism, cronyism, an entire industry that was just this concept of regulatory capture. When Milton Friedman and Ralph Nader can agree on a subject, you know you have an issue. And I think it's some of the same stuff we see with the pharmaceutical industry, is that with regulatory capture, the regulators get weaponized against the people. And so I used open records. I used bare knuckles advocacy is how I'd call it. And the product that was involved in Hannah's death, it had been banned before her crash. I was able to get that removed, about several million dollars worth of that removed in Tennessee. Hannah's story. Go ahead.
So I just want to make sure, I'm not sure I heard the word guardrail in there, to make sure listeners understand that the guardrail that the car hit in the accident is what killed your daughter, and that's what you were able to have removed. Is that correct?
Yes, it was a safety device called an N-terminal that speared into her vehicle, and she was eviscerated. She walked out of our house, and we were never able to see her again because her injuries were so bad. And so what I started seeing is that we are losing about 1,000 people a year in crashes with guardrails. And many of these are similar to injuries that you'd see from weapons of war. And as I started, one of the advantages that I have is that these guardrails are installed in public places. Mm-hmm. I can take the manuals. People will say, how did you become an expert? I read the instruction booklet and I walked up and I checked them. But at this point, I have probably done 1,000 news stories from local newspapers to NBC, CBS, Washington Post, and probably played a role in getting about $500 million worth of a guardrail replaced around the United States and Canada. I've been brought up in Parliament in Canada, got a federal law passed related to crash testing integrity. And one of the main where we met was with this autopsy bill. I am a firm believer in open records. I have filed hundreds of FOIA requests. I have filed hundreds of state open records requests, and public access to the people's information is the lifeblood of almost any advocate. And so any effort that I see to limit that public records access it's bad news. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Could I ask you, if you're comfortable talking about it, is what is it about the structure of the guardrails that make them dangerous in some cases?
So what I found, like in Hannah's crash, one of the things I'm really, really excited about is, I'm discouraged by, in the last 15 years, over 1,000 people have died on America's interstates hitting guardrail end terminals, which is the beginning portion of the guardrail. And those have only ever been tested to 62.5 miles per hour. But where my daughter crashed was a 70 mile an hour crash test zone. I have a young kid. I intentionally learn their names. I want it to hurt. I don't want it to. So I have a young kid in Arizona. He was 16 years old. And Jackson just died when he hit a guardrail that was installed at a 75 mile an hour location. And we have a Federal Highway Administration that is absolutely feckless and has continued to take 30 and 40 year old data, claim they're making data driven decisions, and are allowing 65 mile or 62.5 mile per hour tested devices on our roadside soon. The father of modern guardrail, Dr. Dean Sicking, he was an expert for the NFL during their concussion concerns. If your kids play hockey, his technology is in those boards. When Dale Earnhardt crashed at Daytona, he invented Safer Barrier. He's the top guy on this. Recently invented a new product called Next Gen. I tested it to 77.5 miles per hour, and the very first guardrail installed anywhere in North America, in the world, that's been tested to the highway speeds will be installed where my daughter crashed. It's a 77 and a half mile an hour full capacity terminal. But what it is that we have our regulatory state doesn't protect the people. It protects the large corporations is what I found. But so it was a design flaw. We essentially are giving people a 100-foot bungee cord and say, jump off this 50-foot bridge, and we're shocked when they die.
Wow. I had no idea until I met you, Steve. I hadn't really thought anything at all about guardrails. It's just, they're there. And I'm so grateful to you taking your tragedy and your grief and honoring your daughter's life to take action. To ensure this isn't going to happen to anyone again. And it's fabulous that you're going to have the best guardrail installed right where your daughter lost her life.
That's the first one. There's several million to go after that one. But yes. I want that where Hannah's, I want to be able to, if you and I, any of us ever have this conversation again, I get 1, 2, 3 calls per week from families all across North America. And they say, are you Steve? And I know what's coming next. Yeah. My loved one was cut in half. I lost my leg. I owe my fidelity to the next victim. I have been very careful not to, I will work with any politician because I owe my fidelity to the victim, not to an ideology. And my goal is to, man is created in the image of a holy and just God and bears the image of the image maker. And it is worth fighting for those lives.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Talk to us a little bit more about the sword of corruption that you are seeing. So how does that manifest? So somebody gets a really lucrative contract and then they're putting out the cheapest product they can, regardless of whether or not it will do the job. Is it something as basic as that?
So Hannah's case came to a satisfactory conclusion. We filed a wrongful death action there, but it came to a satisfactory conclusion. But I'll speak to actions that I saw within this company and within another called Trinity. They will develop a product and then make changes to it to get to as low of a possible cost as possible while retaining lobbyists and spending. I mean, Lindsay and Trinity combined have spent well over $1 million lobbying the decision makers to not enforce the rules against them. And so they will degrade their products. I have discovered where bolts were coming in from China that were inferior. I have document after document from both of these companies where we've seen, hey, let's make this change. We'll save $2. Let's do this. It's going to be a cost savings. And never any real consideration for whether it's safe. or whether mm-hmm. we're selling safety theater. And that's often what we're getting. And that's what I see. You know, I was speaking with a senior aide for Senator Markey, who's one of the most liberal senators in the United States Congress or Senate. And what this aide told me, said, Steve, your experience with the Federal Highway Administration with this issue of regulatory capture and just ignoring what's best for the American people is indicative of the experience of a similar advocate like you with every 3, 4, and 5 letter government agency that our government has today.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, everything has with our government systems and agencies have been captured. And I don't know how to solve it. We need to dissolve everything and start again, or just bring everything much more local where we have much more oversight and control when things get too big and they are being done at the federal level. I think that's where the worst happens. You're reminding me of many, many years ago, I believe it was with the DPT shot, there was a famous memo from the vaccine maker. They were aware of the neurological damage being done by their shot. And they were trying to figure out, and they were being sued. They could make changes to make the vaccine safer. It would cost them about a penny a dose to make it safer. Or they could continue to fight these legal battles from children being injured by it and then have to occasionally pay out. And they did the math, and it was a little bit cheaper to just fight the lawsuits than it was to reduce to, you know, add a penny to the cost of their product. So they never made the necessary safety changes. And that sounds like that's guardrails, that's vaccines, that's drugs, that's, you know, so much. I just rewatched the documentary. Well, actually it was a film based on true story called Dark Waters about Teflon. And everything that they went through trying to hide the dangers of the products. And then, of course, the oversight agencies let them get away with it. And the attorney in that film is saying everything that you're saying about the captured agencies.
It's the same. Yeah, it's the same with burn pits in Iraq with our soldiers. It's Flint, Michigan, the water crisis. It's dark water. It's the same thing over and over. And one of the things mm-hmm. that I think we as a victim, we have a responsibility. Our organizations like ALEC or the Chamber have really conditioned, especially conservative and libertarian leaning folks, that litigation is always just, oh, it's just taboo. You shouldn't do that. You're greedy. Well, listen, if there's something worth fighting for, it's your loved one. And if a big mm-hmm. multi-billion dollar corporation has harmed them, you need to sue. You need to file litigation. We need to bend that curve. So when they're doing their cost-benefit analysis, we need nuclear verdicts. We need these nuclear verdicts. Yeah. We need folks to go in and crush somebody like Pfizer or Lindsay or Trinity or Ford or GM or any DuPont. We need them crushed with billion-dollar verdicts, with punitive damages, with... We need to seed this kind of litigation. That's one of the things I do constantly, because I let people know. We just had a case I wasn't personally involved with, but I've tried to create so much awareness that hopefully everybody who's injured in a guardrail crash will contact an attorney. It's a $41 million settlement in the state mm-hmm. of Georgia. You want to bet the contractors in the state of Georgia saw that and are going to have more timely repairs than what they were doing. And we can bend the curve towards safety by suing these organizations and bringing them to their knees. We have to crush them. Plus, the other valuable thing that we can find is the discovery. Through the discovery process, we can out what they have done.
Yes, exactly. And I'm with you 100%. I mean, the reason our government was set up with checks and balances and the division, you know, the judiciary system is a vital component. Utilize it. That's what it's there for. You know, we need to sue when things aren't, and sue to make it hurt. The reason they are making high profits through harm, you know, they're doing it because they can make high profits. If they couldn't make a profit, they wouldn't be doing it. So the only thing they will feel, obviously they don't care that they're harming. The only thing they're going to feel is if you you get some of that high profits that is driving them to behave badly. And if you do it big enough, which is why we need vaccines again to be vaccine makers to be liable for the harm the products cause, they will make safer products, you know, because Absolutely. They will be forced to, because it won't be profitable anymore to make dangerous, fraudulent products. I've got pulled up here. You've got a YouTube channel and it's Steve Imers, E-I-M-E-R-S, Roadside Safety Advocate. And I think if you search for @guardrailguy, it can help you find it. It's Steve Imers, Roadside Safety Advocate on YouTube. Tell us what we can find on your YouTube channel.
Well, I am about one of the least artistic YouTubers you'll find. I have a very hard time staying in frame. I don't do a lot of drop frames and editing. I'm terrible. And when I do try to do something that's of higher quality, it just does awful. But I just go out there. I do primarily short videos. I like the video you have up here. And one of the things is I was able to, I've gotten close to 85 million views here on YouTube. I also decided to join TikTok, pushing me close to 100 million views. But the Tesla crash test that you see there below my channel trailer, that is something because I was able to, I've grown the audience to 215,000 subscribers. I was able to get credentialed by multiple different major trade organizations, got into an event and was able to out crash testing. And this goes to, again, the same type of institutional failures that we see across industry, but regardless of the industry, whether it was Boeing and the Max, we see that. But we had the Tesla and the Rivian were crash tested by the Department of Defense at the University of Nebraska. And everyone knew both of these devices or both of these vehicles catastrophically failed. And we were discussing like, well, what do we do? This has got to come out. And you see the quality of my camera work was not great, but I was in this event. I recorded this. I was able to, at the end of it, I simply said, are you going to release this to Congressman Burchett of Tennessee 2, the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee of the United States Congress, and to the general public? Because I am posting this to YouTube. I posted it. About 12 hours later, it was on Atlanta News First, a major local affiliate. 2 weeks later, the AP and everyone else had it. I did a story about this crash testing with NBC National News. So I
just want to ask, are we talking about the failure of the guardrail or the failure of the cars to be able to withstand crashing into the guardrail? So is it a car design failure we're looking at?
We have an issue of our manufacturers of our vehicles, both EVs and then some of our larger SUVs and trucks have designed, they know their vehicles go off other, they leave the roadway at the same rate as regular vehicles. But yes, this is an issue with the Tesla. It was a center of gravity issue. And with the Rivian, it appeared to be some mass issues, plus also possibly some design issues. Yeah, we have gotten the cart before the horse with the EV thing. We don't have barriers that can contain these devices, and they leave the roadway at the same rate.
Wow.
And so that was one of the things I'm really proud of, I was able to do was out this crash testing. And that's the power of the First Amendment. That's the power of transparency. There was no nefarious kind of motives. These guys at University of Nebraska are wonderful. They're great researchers. Mm-hmm. They just knew they had basically, I've heard it said, I think it was Zig Ziglar said, if you have to swallow a frog, you just don't want to stare at that sucker too long. And they had a frog to swallow. And what I kind of did was I forced them to swallow their frog. But it was important that discussion began. And that's what we have to do with all of this. If you're testing, regardless of your industry, it should be public. It should be conflict-free. And it should be just transparent. Just call balls and strikes. That's all. That's all we have to do is call balls and strikes. And when you have to bring in your lobbyists or bring in tort reform to limit your liability, you're cooking the books. And you can't compete. That's not free market. I once tried naming a child Reagan in Eastern Ukraine. I know what the free market is. When we use the government to protect large corporations, that is corporate fascism.
Yeah, exactly. Amen to that. And who knew that it, I mean, we knew it was systemic, but to realize it's this systemic, even down to guardrails and vehicle testing, it seems to me that one of the few places where industry cannot get away with hiding facts is the airline industry. Because when a plane falls out of the sky, it's pretty hard to hide that fact. But other things, when you've got smaller things, especially when you get down to an individual harm where it's one person, it's so much easier for them to hide and make excuses for. I want to spend a little bit of time, though, Steve, on with all you've done all this great work, and I'm so grateful to it. And I hope others are inspired to just really stay on top of ensuring that we have access to public information about everything regarding safety, about every product that is put out there for us to utilize. It's so important. That's why free speech, as you said, is absolutely fundamental, and access to information is absolutely fundamental. So the other thing that you have done is you have set up a system whereby you record traffic cams in certain areas, and you're able to, you've got something that quickly reviews and alerts you when something may have captured an accident or something. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so we, I have a friend who was a dispatcher in Minnesota and watched the incident involving George Floyd on a traffic camera, and he realized, oh my goodness, I wish I could record this because we got to get to the bottom of what happened. So he began recording DOT web cameras. Essentially, how I would describe it is you can watch your state DOT web cameras, and if you screen recorded it, you could record it 24/7. Well, you're going to need a lot of storage, and you're going to need hundreds and hundreds of tabs. So essentially what we've been able to do is we're recording state DOT cameras in about 12 jurisdictions, some cities, some states. So we record all of Tennessee. Then it integrates with the 511 and 911 alert system using an AI. It claws back to about 30 minutes before the alert took place. And then it's manually reviewed either here or in Pakistan, and we can identify what happened, if that event was captured on camera. So recently, go ahead.
Did you say reviewed in Pakistan?
You know, there was some help that Fiverr is okay. Fiverr can be very good for a creator, is how I put it. It just helps you outsource some of the more mundane tasks. What we can do, I think the first day I met you and I don't trade in what I call pain pornography. I want to study guardrail performance in the real world. So I will often post guardrail crashes that have happened. Occasionally I'll post a crash that involves a death, but in context of what can we learn from this, and nothing gratuitous. But like the morning I first met you, we had captured on right near the Capitol a guardrail crash. And I was like, oh, I caught a guardrail crash right outside these doors. And then we look at it and I see 40 shots fired from a sedan going by. And we were able to pass that along to the police and assist in their homicide investigation. We've probably offered, to law enforcement. We've given multiple shootings around the country. Just recently there was a fatal plane crash in Nashville that it flew right in front of the camera, and we were able to provide that to the National Transportation Safety Board, hopefully help them find answers and maybe help that family find answers. But my primary goal in doing that is to bypass that gatekeeper that prevents us from studying the actual performance. When I first started, they always talk about we want data-driven decisions, and I realized they didn't want to collect the data because they didn't want to know. They didn't want to actually make those decisions. So what I've done is a lot of times you have to end run the regulator, collect the data yourself, and force their hand. And that's what we're doing, is we're showing, you know, if I find an issue with a type of design, I can show you what works. I can show you video after video where, hey, we've had a positive outcome with this device and a negative outcome with this device, to the point where even a child can look at it and say, I'll take hitting that device over there rather than this one over here. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what we need, is we need transparency. We need people at the local level to engage with people at the local level. And regardless of whether it's guardrails or vaccines or aircraft safety, whatever it is. And frankly, I don't care if you are what you believe, just engage with your local leaders and press them and gather the data yourself, gather the open records requests. And when you can, bypass them and gather the data yourself and beat them.
That's fabulous. I think that's the biggest challenge, is gathering the data yourself. I think you're absolutely genius for realizing that you could record this publicly open information streaming from traffic cams and utilize it together.
Give that to my friend Alex at SafetyVet. I just write his coattails.
Yeah, well, both of you, thank you so much for that. And I think maybe that's the key, is all of us trying to figure out how the heck to get the data. In some areas, it's easier than others, but we have got to take charge and not just shrug our shoulders and say, well, that's the system, or there's nothing I can do about it. No. And the more we're aware, the more we gather the data, professionally analyze it, present it, and make changes, the more we can maybe, rehabilitate these agencies that were designed to protect us and that instead protect industry. I think that's what it's going to take. But the first thing is finding that information. You were so right that so many of them refuse to gather the data. I think a lot of agencies have a don't test, don't tell policy. Out in Washington State, there's in fact, in the United States, almost everywhere where there might be PCB, you know, the old toxic banned in 1970s PCBs, there's still a lot of buildings, including schools, that have PCBs in the buildings. But unless somebody tests the building to find the presence of it, parents aren't even told it's potentially a PCB-ridden building. It's don't test, don't tell, this is why being an informed citizen is so important. And, you know, the complacency that we all experienced, COVID sort of broke open, don't you think, so many Americans to the real problems with shrugging your shoulder and just living with corruption that you knew existed and not
Absolutely.
Paying attention.
For me, I was 4 years ahead of the curve, because I went to DC and I thought, oh, they'll just take a look at the facts. And then I got punched in the face with reality of what Akin Gump or, you know, Gibson Dunn or Cozen O'Connor, these huge $1 billion law firms that are also lobbying firms, that we have to be able to punch, you know, I was seldom a fan of Barack Obama, but he had a good saying, we got to punch him back twice as hard.
Yeah.
And that's proverbial, not with violence, because one of the things I've seen that they love to do is try to other you and try to convince other people that, well, they're just not. So they're just an ideologue. Well, no, you cannot let them win those battles. You just got to say you got to present yourself as normal and unstoppable.
Exactly. And Lisa, doesn't his story remind you a bit of the journey Pierre Corey has gone on and how he articulates it? Because when he discovered that, you know, ivermectin worked and it could save the world, and he began going to speak to Congress and others and just saying, hey, listen, you guys just don't understand. Here's the science. Here's the data. Here's the cases. This works. And then when he got either silence or pushback, he began to understand what he was up against and, you know, the journey that he has gone on. But I tell you, Pierre Corey and the FLCCC have punched back twice as hard. And they continue to punch with what they are doing with waking up the world, just like you're doing. And so, you know, this is how to be a hero. You have to ignore the ad hominem attacks there, you know, because it doesn't do you any good to get all riled up and everything when you're being attacked. But unfortunately, the leaders in this movement also have to be willing to make some personal sacrifices and sometimes their careers, like our wonderful Dr. Sibley with standing up to the ABIM, American Board of Internal Medicine, which we're going to be talking about in the future, and others are losing their license.
Smile while you're doing it. Smile and just keep on pushing forward. They hate that. The opposition hates that. One of the things I'd recommend a couple books. One is Live Not by Lies. And the other is, I just recently started reading it, but Dietrich Bonhoeffer's Letters from Jail. And Bonhoeffer has totally informed my worldview and my advocacy. And one of the things that he says, silence in the face of evil is itself evil. Not to speak is to speak. And oh goodness, I'm butchering the quote, but anyways.
Oh, that's okay. You're doing great.
God will not hold us faultless. Do speak. Don't be worried about it.
Yeah. Be brave. Stand in your truth. Be peaceful. Stand up, speak out, and this is how we make a better world. Yeah, you've been very quiet, Lisa. So I hope I haven't talked over you too much. I hope that gap in timing between our systems here is not keeping you silent. No, it's great. We try to give most of the time to the guests, but I am a talker and sometimes talk over people. But this has been a wonderful hour, Steve, and I'm so grateful to you. I'm so sorry for your loss. I'm so grateful for you to turning that loss and Hannah's memory into this mission of saving lives and overturning corruption.
Well, what I can say is in all things, God can work together for good. What happened to Hannah was absolute evil. And God has been able to do some remarkable things. And don't waste your grief. If you have suffered significant loss, don't waste your grief.
Yeah. Use it for making things better and moving forward and honoring that memory. So, Steve, the guardrail guy, thank you for joining us. Lisa Templeton, thank you so much for being my lovely co-host this week. And everyone, have a wonderful weekend. Stand in your truth. Hug your kids. Hug a tree. And we will see you next week on 1150 AM KKNW and CHDTV. Take care.
Are you suffering from a sinking feeling that the COVID-19 pandemic is being blown out of proportion and that nothing in the news is making any sense? If so, then there is a fact-based, science-driven news show designed just for you. My name is Del Bigtree, and I am the host of The High Wire, the world's most trusted news source in digital media when it comes to accurate, science-based reporting on the COVID-19 pandemic. From COVID-19 vaccine development to mask mandates, school shutdowns to job layoffs, The High Wire goes beyond providing you with the most accurate, evidence-based investigations. We send you links to the sources for all of our reporting so that you can further your own investigation and come to your own informed conclusions. High above above the agenda-driven circus of mainstream media, we do not run. We do not hide from the truth. Instead, we walk the high wire. If you care about truth, then join us on Instagram, Twitter, Roku, and our website, thehighwire.com.
Informed Choice Washington is a nonprofit organization that advocates for healthy immunity, medical freedom, and fully informed medical consent. The right to make medical choices without coercion is fundamental to our civil liberties and a basic principle in all human rights declarations. To learn more, tune in each Friday from 3 to 5 p.m. to An Informed Life Radio and visit the website informedchoicewa.org. It's time to take a stand for medical freedom. Go to informedchoicewa.org. Today.